We needed a miracle. And then we got one. This beautiful and special little creature will be a revolution in the livestock industry. Our super pigs will not only be big and beautiful, they will also leave a minimal footprint on the environment, consume less feed, and produce less excretions. And most importantly, they need to taste fucking good.
Hi, welcome to a new episode of You Podcast. My name is Austin Bernie, and I'm joined by my regular co-hosts,
Martin.
And a man.
I still can't go at night.
Second.
This week we're reviewing Okja, the new Bong Joon-ho movie. I think I need to open up IMDb though, because I fear I might be messing up everybody's name. Although this is like a filmmaker I love, I've seen most of his movies, and I was really excited when we got the screener for this one, because there's been a lot of noise about this movie. I don't know, did you guys follow any of that? I think, Amit, for you, this is like a complete unknown, this movie, when I sent you the screener, right?
Yeah, I really didn't know it at all. I confused this with a completely other film until I watched the trailer the second time, and then I gave it a go. Today was the first time, actually, and I was surprised with the amount of collaboration in it. Like, you have quite a lot of people involved in it, and a lot of different names as well, no?
Yeah, it's quite...
You have a writer... Yeah, but being an executive producer, like, quite a lot of people in it.
Yeah, it's actually much bigger than I expected. And again, he's Bong Joon-ho is one of those directors, because I've seen so many of his movies and I loved all of them. When I knew he had a movie coming out, I was just gonna watch it anyway, you know? So I didn't watch too many trailers. I didn't follow too much of the news. I just wanted to go in fresh and watch the movie. So
yeah.
I heard a bit of rumbling here and there on the periphery. What about you, Martin? Had you heard anything about Okja, like how it did at Cannes? Because it got booed. I don't know if you guys heard about that.
What?
Really? That's a surprise, I have to say.
So not the
Which
movie.
Probably spoils my general sort of feeling toward the film that I was going to give later.
No,
I didn't know that.
Well, it wasn't the movie, apparently. It was the logo of Netflix when it came up. Because Cannes has apparently now banned any movie to enter into... And okay, I don't have the article in front of me what they've done and what they've banned, but the way I understood it is that if a movie doesn't have a theatrical release, it can't enter the Cannes competition. So Netflix releases usually don't get a theatrical release. And there's also just, you know, Cannes is quite conservative in the way they kind of treat cinema as like this great art. And Netflix is a bit of a disruptor in that market. So it got booed. Even Amazon Studios, their movies got booed when the logo came up. So, but I think overall the reviews were quite positive, because most of the reviews I've read have been from the Cannes Festival, where a lot of people saw it, because obviously the movie hasn't been out in theaters or hasn't been on Netflix yet, so they're still under embargo.
I'm actually really jealous of anyone that got to see that on the big screen, because my first comment to you guys would be like, fuck, how is this film not in the cinema?
It's so beautiful, isn't it?
This is the first time I'm actually not siding with Netflix that they're releasing this for all of us to see internationally, but I actually do think this film deserves to be in the fucking cinema.
Yeah.
Like, it's different levels, different layer of audience. Like, it's just mental.
Yeah, I think this is kind of the first talking point I wanted to talk to you guys about. Martin, what do you feel about that? Because we've had so many Netflix conversation, you know, that there's so much content, you can't even catch up. Like, you know, all the other streaming platforms. It's a conversation we have quite a few times on your podcast. But
true. I mean, I'm a big fan of Netflix, and I support sort of subscription streaming services generally. I mean, I have an Amazon Prime Video. I kind of understand the mentality of where they're coming from with the whole sort of Cannes Film Festival. Because also don't forget that I think I'm right, and maybe you or Ahmed will correct me, but in France, there has to be a crazy amount of time in between a theatrical release and a streaming release, right? It has to be 18 months or something, or...
Yeah, they're quite strict. I don't know if it's...
There's a legal sort of thing that they have going on there, which I guess is around... It's the same thing about they have to play X amount of French music on the radio.
Yeah, same thing where Uber is having difficulty getting a foothold and stuff.
And also, don't forget that in terms of the Oscars,
yeah,
I think, I know this used to be the case, but to qualify, you have to have the movie screened at a certain theater in America.
Yeah.
That's for the it can't just go general nationwide, but not appear in this certain theater. So I personally don't have an issue. I just sort of think the barrier that they're throwing up is so small to get over for a company like Netflix or Amazon that they could easily just go, well, we'll put it in a cinema. That's my thing. So, people booing is just kind of dumb, I would say.
It's kind of like, they boo a lot. It's kind of a condition that they boo for a lot of movies, all right?
Yeah, you're kind of like booing at the principle of something.
Yeah. I don't know.
Not the...
Boo. Yeah. So no, it's a tough one because, you know, like, I think we have this idea, you know, that the cinema business is now pretty much dominated by multiplexes, and on those multiplexes they need superhero movies. And the unfortunate situation is that, I mean, this is my opinion, right? Is that really is what works. Even like movies like The Raid 2 or Scott Pilgrim were pretty much, you know, they didn't make as much money as people were hoping for. And those are kind of, you know, for me are one of the best movies of the last few years. I love those and they didn't make any money theatrically. Like even a movie like, you know, just going off plain visuals, Jupiter Ascending. I loved the visuals of Jupiter Ascending. Okay. The movie itself has some issues, but watching it on the big screen is amazing, you know. But these movies are just not making any money anymore. Some people are, but you know, like I don't even think Quentin Tarantino makes his movies make that much money. Because he had a whole.
I'd be surprised if Hateful Eight made a lot of money.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Hateful Eight. He did something whole special. We went to that special screening, on selected theaters and stuff like that. And there's just not that many small independent artsy focused theaters anymore. So where would you screen Okja, and where would it make money? You know. So it's kind of a tough situation to be in, I guess. I know that I kind of appreciate that I can just watch Okja from home, immediately on the day of the release. And I know that, for example, Park Chan Wook's movie, Handmaid's Tale, what is it? The Handmaid? I think that's the movie. It came out.
The Handmaiden.
Yeah, I'm confusing it with the other show. That came out, and he's another director that I adore. And I just didn't get a chance to go to Central London because that's the only place they were playing the movie. And I just didn't have a chance to watch it on the big screen. So now I'll have to watch it when it's on Amazon Prime or whatever. So
yeah,
that's kind of, yeah, like you said, Ahmed, man, like when I was seeing those mountain shots in the mountain or, you know, in even the city landscape or those action sequences, I was like, man, how awesome would it be to watch this, you know, on a big...
This is what I actually meant more now that we're talking, not like, fuck, it's not in the cinema, but this film does not deserve to be watched on an iPad or a laptop, okay? Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, I'm glad I have a big-ass TV to watch it. Like, I was sitting there enjoying it, but I was thinking, like, this is so wrong to be watched on a small screen, like on an iPad or something like this. That's what I guess I meant more, you know?
Yeah.
Still, I would love to see that in the cinema, and... supposedly, and I'm air quoting because I know you all can't see me over the podcast, but like Belgium, for instance, is supposed to be very, very snobby, and we're full of these small independent cinemas that should play films like that. Nowhere on the radar. Nowhere.
Yeah, and that was a problem when I used to live there too. Unless it's like an Asian action movie, You're not going to be catching it. And even then, you need to go into some really rough neighborhoods and watch it at a very rough
restaurant. It is essentially that, like seven scattered small cinemas all around in like the shadiest places you can think of. But I would not mind for something like this. But again, like it was nowhere flagged anywhere here.
So yeah, it's a tough one, and I think it's just Netflix is such a big disruptor in the market that we haven't really. I mean, it needs to settle, and we need to figure out something. Because I guess also in a way, you know, filmmakers appreciate that they can make the movie, and Netflix isn't making it very tough for them, and they're just giving a check, and they can just do whatever they want. Which even a big studio doesn't let, you know, movie makers just do what they want, and Netflix is making, you know, allowing that. So they maybe don't care, but I think they still kind of want to see their movies on a big screen. Just kind of, they have that, you know, old school kind of approach to it.
But again, I don't want to, like, no, I don't want to. I can't say that this is your average budget Netflix film because that one cost them like $50 million.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's a big budget for Netflix film, no?
I mean, that's the thing. There's no Netflix film anymore. They're making big budget movies now. You know?
That's what I was assigned with. I was like, $50 million. That's a very, very decent budget for it. And honestly, dude, for the production value we're getting in, for the cinematography value, for all the beautiful shots, how the director just visualized the relationship in the jungle when they were just living together and just going on with their life, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, Marty, anything else you want to add to that point about cinema versus home viewing?
No, I don't think so, but I think it's an interesting journey that we've come on in quite a short space of time. So we looked at a film called Spectral, I think it was.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, an early sort of Netflix release. And then a few weeks ago, or maybe a couple of months, I'm not so good with dates and things at the moment, but War Machine.
Yeah, that was like 6 weeks ago or something. Yeah, that was really.
So we've come quite in terms of, I mean, they've had loads of other things that's true, not least the sort of Adam Sandler and Paul Blart, Mall Cop, whatever film he was in about being a spy writer. So they're kind of hitting quite a lot of. They're hitting a broad range.
Yeah, they are. There's so much content right now being released by them that you just, it's like a big gamble. Sometimes I feel like when I'm watching a Netflix film, like, am I going to crap out or is it going to be an amazing film? In case of today, that was actually an amazing film.
Because also the other thing is that they don't have to, because these things don't go into cinema, mm-hmm. they're just distributed on the platform. So they have none of the, the costs.
Yeah, the
for distributing these things, for marketing them, they don't have to market them anywhere near as heavily.
Yeah.
They've got a subscriber base that will just pick up and receive the messages. I just get emails from Netflix. It's great. Or they just send it to the app. New thing, you might be interested. Boom. So, you know, they're mitigating quite a lot of risk, I guess, by sort of not going for the distribution.
I also have to say it's probably the first movie of Netflix that I've liked the most. I mean, in a way, it kind of hits all the spots for me, the sweet spots for me. It worked for me, where the previous ones, I've always had issues with it. Even when you go back to our Spectral review, I wasn't convinced of it. War Machine that we were planning to review, I didn't like that movie at all. So, I mean, they have a few other ones, like, the first Adam Sandler one, I didn't really appreciate that one either, so this is kind
There's Adam Sandler on Netflix that's good.
Sorry?
There's nothing Adam Sandler that's recent on Netflix that's good. Yeah. He's been really destroying it lately, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I've not seen his Sandy Wexler one, the latest one, I don't know what if that is any good or not.
Supposed to be alright, actually.
Yeah, that might be slightly better. I didn't see the do-over, and I did see the cowboy one, whatever that was called. We're probably the least informed film podcast there is. We don't know any names. We're just kind of like, that thing that he did, you know?
so much stuff being released, dude. Like, it's hard to be on top of all of that. Like, we actually have stuff to do as well.
Plus, I think the TV is still the best what they're at the moment. You know, like, everything that they've done and even the recurring seasons are good. I mean, they've canceled out a few shows already, like Hemlock Grove they canceled, and they canceled Bloodlines, I think. But Orange is the New Black, House of Cards is still going very strong.
Ooh.
Sorry, what happened?
No, I was surprised the Bloodline got canceled because it was getting a lot of rave from everyone, actually.
It's a great show. Nobody watched it. I loved season one. I just haven't had a chance to watch season two yet. But everything I've heard about it is that it's a great show. So, I also just finished, watched Better Call Saul. I just finished up the finale and it's amazing. I think I enjoy it more than Breaking Bad at this point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And although it's not a Netflix show, it is kind of a partnership with an American channel. It's amazing. And it's a long wait because I now have to wait, you know, a whole year for 10 more episodes. And, it's a great show. It's a great show. So I really appreciate the finale. So let's get into Okja a bit, into the movie a bit more. Maybe let's do a little summary, because I think for the people that haven't heard of it, and I think there's a lot of people that haven't heard of it. So this is coming out the 26th, I think, so next week on Netflix. And it's Okja is a story of Mija, a young Korean girl who risks everything to prevent a powerful multinational company from kidnapping her best friend, a massive animal named Okja. So that's the summary from IMDb. It stars Jake Gyllenhaal, Tilda Swinton, Lily Collins, Giancarlo Esposito, Paul Dano, I don't even know how to pronounce her name. I'll give it a shot. Seo-hoon Ahn, I think, who's playing Mija. So that's kind of the story. It's directed by Bong Joon-ho, who directed, The Host, Snowpiercer, Mother, Memories of a Murder. All four of these movies are amazing. So if people haven't heard of him or haven't seen his work, I would strongly recommend they seek it out. So Martin, man, maybe let's start with you. What were your general thoughts on Okja?
Thought it was really good. In a very brief statement. And it's kind of odd because if you look at the sort of the synopsis of the story, that's really not something that appeals to me. But at the same time, all of his films appeal to me. So it was, I was just a bit wary that it would be a little bit, I mean, I shouldn't have been, I should have had a lot more faith in the director from the beginning. But I was just a little bit wary that it could be a bit cutesy and a bit, and actually it's not. So it's really good.
Yeah, there was this fear that it might be just this kind of, you know, child and an animal kind of movie, you know, like Pete's Dragon or E.T. or whatever, or Free Willy even. But yeah, it's not necessarily that. Ahmed, man, what were your general thoughts on the movie?
I had no idea what I was getting into. I was watching it. Halfway through the film, I was like on the edge of my seat. I have to admit, on the first half hour, I got a little bit judgmental in the sense that this is not taking off straight away. This is a little bit on the slow side, but that was a misconception from me. It only came later on. And it's just nothing but he was just telling us a really good fucking story and he just needed to lay things for us to distinguish the two different worlds that he's trying to set up. Yeah. So that I get, that I see. And afterwards, I switched off the film. I went out on the terrace, had a cigarette, and I kept thinking, this is kind of like King Kong before he goes to the city meets HBO The Night Of, as in, there's definitely innocence that's gone by the end of this film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just not the same kid anymore. It's not the same Okja anymore. And the only hope is whatever is saved or whatever, so we don't ruin shit.
Yeah, let's keep spoiling at the end. But yeah, I definitely want to talk a bit about that a bit later on.
But definitely, definitely, Innocence is gone exactly like the Night of. Like, you guys saw the Night of, no?
No, I didn't watch it because it was just too close to me. I just, the level of identification with what was going on was too high. I just couldn't take it.
That was breaking my heart as I was watching the Night Off.
That was like, am I watching a documentary about somebody's life? Like, this could actually happen, so I don't want to. This is horrible. So yeah, I skipped that. Cause also, I listened to Serial, so I thought, yeah, I get it. I was looking forward to hearing your thoughts on it because I kind of forced this on you to watch it, and I knew you didn't know much of this.
I confused it with a rape movie that I was like not gonna watch that until I watched the trailer again. You know,
yeah.
I wrote another thing.
Yeah, but I was like, I love this filmmaker, so I was really looking forward to it, and I knew you maybe didn't know that much about it, so I was like, what's Ahmed gonna think? So I had a bit of that, and I was also like, I had heard this noise about the Cannes thing happening, and then I'd also heard about it when the Doctor Strange race issue happened, that
I still don't get that connection. If you can elaborate on it, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, so apparently, like, okay, this is how I'm remembering it, but I'm not 100% sure. Let me just quickly search the name of the person. It's an Asian American actress called, I think, Margaret Cho. And she was, she kind of, like, I think what happened is, like, they were trying to be a bit more racially sensitive when they were making Doctor Strange, because they'd made a huge switch in the race of some of the characters. And they were Asian characters that were then switched off for and made white characters. So that was kind of an issue, and Tilda Swinton kind of reached out to Margaret Cho, or Margaret Cho reached out to Tilda Swinton, and they were kind of communicating about how to be sensitive towards Asian sensibilities or something like that, and that apparently got leaked, those conversations, and it was a lot about, you know, like, and one of the points that Tilda Swinton had made, I want to be very careful about it, and I'm also producing this Korean movie with Bong Joon-ho, so I was like, oh, okay, that kind of already clicked something in my mind. So there was a bit of a controversy there. I think if people just Google Margaret Cho, Tilda Swinton, they'll find it. So I'd heard that, I had not heard the Cannes thing, and then I could finally watch the movie, and then I had in the back of my mind, what's Ahmed going to think about this? So there was a lot kind of going on, so that kind of shaked my belief in the filmmaker, which I was completely on board, and I also felt that the start, like you said, Ahmed, was a bit weird. It was kind of Tilda Swinton's playing this very over-the-top kind of character, in a way what she did in Snowpiercer too. Very theatrical. Then there's an appearance from Jake Gyllenhaal, which is also kind of very over the top and campy. And it kind of was like, okay, I'll just go with it and see where it goes. And then as soon as they kind of move up into the mountains and where we get to see Okja for the first time, then it kind of like, oh, you're kind of taken aback. Like, wow, this is, cause it's an impressive character that they've created. In a way, it's very real life, but on the other hand, it's still so fantastical. I mean, it's not something that exists, but it has enough touch points, like it's a bit of a hippo, it's a bit of a dog, it's a bit of a pig, it has a bit of the, but it's very, very smart, so it's a bit of a dolphin, I guess. So, I don't know. Plus, clearly you guys all know I'm not an animal lover, so I was already stretching there. But yeah.
Actually, it's pretty funny because when I was watching that, my wife walked in after work and she's like, what is this? I was like, it's a movie about a pet pig. She's like, that's an elephant or a hippo. That's not a pig. I was like, get out. I need to finish this.
Yeah, exactly. But the moment you see the connection between Mija and Okja, and especially the eyes of Okja, I think they are probably like real eyes of an actor that they've kind of I don't know what they've done exactly in terms of special effects, but the expression looked like it was shot on somebody's real eyes. And just, they just had that level of expression. At that moment, I was in. And I think also the movie is so, the pacing is, it takes a while, but when it once gets going, it just is pretty much nonstop. And then you're just on board of this thrill ride that doesn't end until the end. And I just thought that was pretty amazing, of this movie. So, yeah, I kind of loved it. It is interesting to see, like, it does, it's not like just a buddy animal kind of movie. They do touch upon quite a few other themes. Martin, how do you think they approach those? Because there's a bit of about, you know, anti-corporate greed or corporate greed in there. There's a bit of, you know, genetic manipulation in there. There's animal cruelty in there. And a lot of people, I read somebody say that this is the movie that will make you a vegetarian. So, Martin, was
I don't deny that. Like, this is actually very, very right. Like, that just made me question a lot after watching that, to be honest.
Yeah. So, Martin, did you ever think about giving up your bacon?
Only if it comes from super pigs.
I'm never eating.
I don't want super pig bacon.
Yeah.
No super bacon.
Marty, so a pig is okay, but a super pig is not okay. All right.
I was wondering.
No, they did too good a job in recreating Opia. But no, like the wider themes are pretty straightforward, pretty much bare for everybody to see. I mean, I think the thing is that basically everybody is, even the kind of animal rights people, are kind of sort of sent up in a way.
Yeah.
Not as much as, they don't have the piss taken out of them as much as, that corporate stooges and sort of corporate way of life and sort of that kind of faceless sort of corporation behavior. But no, it does make you think. It's a pretty good way to make a point about the food chain, how you feed people, what humanity is going to do to feed everybody, GMOs, all these kinds of things.
Did you ever feel there were too much, like, there were too many themes in it? Extra added to it, because they were also making fun of, like you said, they're making fun of the ALF, then there's also the animal slaughter in there, then there's also the GMO, then it's also about, you know, just, this artifice of, you know, being an ecological company, but actually just being an evil, you know, just being evil in a way.
I mean, I would say no to your question, basically because lots of those things revolve around the same theme. Mm. So they're all interconnected, I would say. Cause you can't sort of have the ALF without the sort of factory farming and things like that. Mm. And that sort of goes hand in hand with GMO and everything else. So for me, I don't think there's too much going on in that sense. And I think he's got a very good style when it comes to, sort of ripping people a new one. I think he does it. I mean, if you look at Memories of Murder, the police are made to look like raving idiots in that.
Yeah. Right. Which is a theme a lot of times in Korean movies, I've noticed. Like, for police are just like bumbling idiots.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. I mean, so he's got his. There's obviously a recurring thing there with him, and I think it's good. I think it's well done. And I love the if effectively the. I mean, I think the real joy for me with the film came with the pig napping.
Yeah.
And the sort of like the riot through the shopping center.
Yeah.
That was hardcore.
you know, that was brilliant.
For me, it kind of even started from the first scene where Mija falls off that mountain and Okja then says,
exactly.
That was like, wow, what can they do with this character and how it kind of interplays with each other? And also just the kind of resolution of that scene was really touching. You really believe that these guys have an intense, you know, relationship, Mija and Okja.
Well, yeah, because you have to see it from her perspective. She's an orphan. She doesn't have parents. She doesn't remember her parents. And she's just being raised by a very, very, very kind, passive grandfather. You know what I mean? That he was also sheltering her from part of the truth because he didn't want to hurt her feelings. So literally the only connection outside of her grandfather was her pet. And we saw how close they are when it tried to save its life so it can save the girl. So it is a very, very strong bond, and especially for a girl of a young age to be living with a creature for 10 years of its life how old she is. Yeah, that would change a lot, no?
Yeah, and also just, I think we haven't mentioned it, but in the movie it's very clear that Okja is owned by the Mirando Corporation.
Yeah. So
it is owned by them in a way. And it's also, you kind of understand they also created him. So it's like, you know, who owns life is also kind of a question that's raised in a way. I don't know if necessarily every theme that is raised in the movie gets a satisfying conclusion or an answer necessarily. But I think that's kind of also what makes it a Korean movie, that not everything needs to have an answer. It's not like a Hollywood, everything wrapped in a bow and you're done. You know, go home. Did you have fun? Here it definitely leaves you with
a lot of thoughts.
Yeah, a lot of feelings, a lot of thoughts, a lot of emotions that you then need to kind of process afterwards.
Pretty much what happened to me on the doctor. I finished it. I just kept thinking about it for a bit of time.
Yeah, yeah. So what were for you the standout scenes in the movie?
It's pretty much, if we take it in order, when it sacrificed its life and made the leap so the girl would survive. After that, after that, I really clicked when the girl took her last of her saving and took everything and made it from her little town village to the big city, looking for her pet. That, I don't know why, it really, really spoke to me. And the whole...
How she ran through those mountains, yeah. That was amazing.
Like, that was relentless, dude. She kept running and running and running. And talking of running, when she finally found her after she knocked over a glass door, do not ask me how she did that with reinforced glass, but how relentless she was when she kept chasing after the truck, and it was beautifully shot. You see the truck, and she's in, like, a chase scene, but instead of a vehicle or a bike, she was just using her goddamn feet, and you see it parallel on a gridlock, and she's just going, hauling ass, going, going, going. Even at a certain point, I was like, Jesus, when is she gonna give up? Like, I would be like winded, like 20 meters back, dying, like, you know, and it just, like, she just kept going at it and at it and at it. And the final thing that really stuck with me is, after the animal was tortured and the eyes were bloodshot red and it didn't recognize the little girl anymore, that it actually hurt her arm a little bit from a small bite. I don't know why, but that just stuck with me.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that if he didn't recognize her or he was just traumatized of what happened, but it was a very touching scene for sure. Yeah.
No, this film has a lot of emotional stuff. Like, they played well on it. Like it's more like, what are the scenes that didn't stick with me in acting level or something like that, you know?
Yeah,
but yeah. Outside of all that, I have to admit, the villains are fucking vicious in that film.
They have that cartoony over the topness. It almost made me remember a bit of almost like Fifth Element-ish, you know?
I
saw the villain of 101 Dalmatian.
Ah, yeah, Miss Cruella de Vil. Yeah, it definitely had those kind of shades to it. But it was funny because, like, every mean and terrible character, there is still a moment in the movie where you feel bad for them. You know, they, you know that they're all kind of stuck in the position they are stuck, and they just continue to make bad choices at that time. But I know that there was a moment where Jake Gyllenhaal's character is just kind of, I don't know what he's exactly like. He's just tired of where he's stuck, and he's in a situation with Okja in a room, which is a terrible place to be in, and he says that. And there was just a moment where I felt sorry for him, but then how he immediately flips and does something unforgivable, it just had that many shades in a villain character, which we don't necessarily have. And I think they also had a very kind of eclectic cast. I think the casting, although good individual casting choices, I'm not 100% sure if it all gelled together as like a cast in one movie. I just felt like they were cast per character. I don't even know if I can explain this correctly, but it did feel that they were all a bit disjointed.
I don't think it should gel together, because it's just showing you different perspective of different things going on. You know what I mean? Like, you have the scientist who's suffering. I still can't pinpoint whether he was forced to do this, and with time, like you said, it's just something, you know, one bad decision after another, or he's just a plain sadist. Like, that is something I couldn't put my finger on. And I think all the small individual characters in there are, they have their little circle or their whole, their little niche part in it, you know? Yeah. Or you don't agree with?
No, I do. I think there was also the moment that Jake Gyllenhaal's character figured out that, you know, he might not be the face of the company anymore, and that just kind of switched off this vicious side of him. Just this inherent greed in them, both in him and Tilda Swinton's character, and that then just manifests in cruelty. What about you, Martin? Were there what were your thoughts about the main performance in the movie? Because there were also, like, Paul Dano was in there. Lily Collins was in there. So, Steven Yeun from The Walking Dead. I don't watch The Walking Dead, so I don't know if he's alive in that or not. There was a bit of a thing that he died, his character died. I'm not 100% sure.
There's one guy from The 100, the show.
Sorry?
There was one guy from The 100. There's a show called The 100.
I don't know who was
that. Ah, okay.
No, who?
As soon as Paul Dano appears in the balaclava, I was like, that's Paul Dano.
Yeah, there was not a moment I didn't know it was Paul Dano. Yeah, exactly.
But that made me happy.
Yeah.
So I thought he was good. I thought if you want some very strange portrayal of characters with some really deep flaws, then Tilda Swinton's brilliant. However you want to sort of portray those flaws within that character, and she does that pretty well twice, I would say. And yeah, I just thought the little girl was great.
Yeah, she was amazing. Isn't it?
Yeah. Really, really good, really good. The cast itself, I think, yeah, it's really good. And good to see Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah, it was funny because I'm like I said, I'm watching Better Call Saul and I'm watching this at the same time. So it's just interesting to see him play kind of different shades on it. I think we can start getting into the spoiler section unless you guys have any other thoughts that you want to talk about.
No, spoilers. It's good.
I have to say that I was very impressed by the makeup artist, especially in the scene when the little girl in the mall got hurt by Okja, and she had such a puffy eye. It was so goddamn realistic. It just reminded me of, like, the Rocky movie makeup, you know what I mean? Like, it was really well done.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of these the little shots and moments in the movie that made me kind of think of other things, and especially, like, Paul Dano when he comes into the room and he has those signs, and it was very Love Actually. He was like, love you. It's like, what is this? What's going on? Let's get into spoilers a little bit. What what did you kind of, like, because, I mean, we essentially want to talk about, you know, the final few escape scenes. Let's say the escape in a way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the visual of that pig farm or whatever that is. Super.
Not a pig farm. That's in, Abattoir. Oh my God, I forgot how to word the name.
I mean,
slaughterhouse.
The one thing is that I don't think they had to adapt much. I think it's very based on reality and what goes on.
Oh, this is exactly what it is.
Yeah. But
this is exactly what it is. A gun in the head and they die. And then they cut into pieces.
Yeah. And it's because this whole movie, two hours long, they've humanized Okja so much that you feel for this CGI character. And then when she gets captured and what happens with her, especially even the forced mating scene earlier, it's hard to kind of, you know, on the one hand, you understand that, you know, it's an animal and the rituals are different and this is what goes on. But just seeing it in that way happen with a character that we love or, you know, we've lived with for a few hours, it's painful to watch, man. It's painful, painful to watch. And I get that idea about, you know, like, they're doing this to pigs. They're doing this to cows. They're doing this to chickens and goats, you know. They're doing this to fish. So it's hard to watch. It's really, really hard. I had a really tough time watching what happens with Okja. And again, I'm not an animal lover and I'm definitely not a pig lover in any way, shape or form, but it was hard to watch. I had a really rough time with it. What were you, like, was there a specific moment where you guys thought, wow, shit just got real?
Yeah. And I saw the carnivore in me doesn't like to say that. But it is the scene near the end at the abattoir.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, I was so having different emotions and feelings because first you see, Okja is like the second or third pig into the slaughterhouse chamber. And I started looking at the scene behind. I was like, fuck, man. So it's okay that we all want to save only one and one pig, which is Okja, and fuck the rest. Like, you know, that was the first feeling that I had. And then as she's running, trying to stop that, and she's going in, that's actually when my Egyptian side came out and I stood from the couch. I was like, do not go in there. Do not go in there. Do not go in there.
Yeah.
Because I exactly knew what would happen if she goes in there. All her innocence, all her faith in humanity and in the big cities and everything is just going to get shattered to shit. And she's just going to see how everything has just one big machine just to feed people and whatnot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that just did not bode well with me at all.
Yeah, even what Jake Gyllenhaal does to her, you know, it's
that was messed up on so many levels.
I mean, it's painful to watch, and you know that this happens. Anybody that's read a bit about how animals get treated and stuff like that, it's horrible to watch. It's horrible to watch. It's horrible how we treat animals, just generally, you know. But yeah, what did you guys then think about the final, let's say, resolution of how Okja then escapes? What were your thoughts about that? Because I love that scene. And for a lot of people that didn't work. The payment she receives, Tilda Swinton's character receives and decides to then let Okja go, that really worked for me. Because, you know, it just kind of solidifies what these companies are, what they're kind of looking for. And, you know, I don't want to get on my high horse about companies when I'm doing the exact same thing. You know, we're eating these animals where we know where they're coming from and we just cut up every part and just have a chicken breast, so we don't even connect it that it actually comes from a living being. So I don't want to say that, you know, we're without fault here, but I liked how it kind of got resolved with it. And I also really liked, it was heartbreaking, man, like that those two super pigs that kind of wanna save their child.
Yeah.
That really hit home, man. Like, with all of these refugees crisis going on in the world and, you know, like what's happening in Syria and all that, you know, just parents, till their last final breath are, you know, are just trying to save their calves and save their children. It really worked for me and really hit kind of a nerve for me. What about you guys?
I mean, just thinking about the sort of savior through the golden pig. I can get why some people will say that that's not such a well executed sort of device or whatever, but it was good enough for me. Okja lived, so that's fine. And also it tied it nicely back to the fact that the granddad hadn't really been sort of wasting his money or whatever. He'd actually done something which in the end, from the beginning of the movie, went right to the end of the movie. And as well, because that character, this Nancy, isn't it? Because she'd been played, and equally her twin sister, like you said earlier, they're played in very almost sort of like pantomimish kinds of ways, that actually that kind of like, oh, I won't spare her life, but if you want to buy her life, then I'll let you do that. Mm. So that kind of, for me, that does actually make sense, and it does sort of hold. And yeah, I have no problem with that at all. No, I think that's for me at least. I was happy.
Yeah. What about you, Ahmed?
Yeah, it was a little bit different in the sense that it didn't work for me until a specific scene. So I'll just walk you guys through it. When they decided not to shoot Ogja in the head and they changed it for the gold, for the golden piglet, I straight away thought, fuck, this is not working for me. It's a completely different animal. He saw a whole different kind of treatment. He'll never be the same. And then they started walking and the police is in front of them. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. It's not working for me. Not until the super mama pig and the super papa pig pushed the wires while being electrocuted down, and a little itty bitty piglet went out of the gap, and then Ogja put it in its mouth, and they took it back home with them. That's the only link that made me happy with the ending, that at least something will grow up not knowing about all this bullshit. Because you saw it straight away that that Mija and Ogja are just simply not the same.
Yeah.
In the last scene, you saw they're not the same, especially Ogja. She was always sitting next to her when she's eating by the big entrance. And now she's just sitting in the back. Like, and she even like turned her eye away with the last scene. And is the baby piglet that's will have the right life. But even Mija is just simply like a huge, huge, huge piece of her died. Hmm. You know?
Yeah, I don't know if I read it that way, but I definitely think that they saw some shit, you know? Like, it's crazy. And I think you definitely see that in the walk away from them when they look around and they see, okay, we saved one pig, but there's like hundreds of them that are not be able to save them. And just that howl that they give, that parting howl that all the pigs gave, that was heartbreaking. It's kind of that Korean way of doing things, you know, at the, like, even Snowpiercer or all Bong Joon-ho movies, or even like that Train to Busan recently. It's always this ending where it's people get out, but it's not necessarily a happy ending at all. Even Snowpiercer was like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, that in Snowpiercer it's kind of, it's redemption from one thing, but wow, there's still a massive unanswered question.
Yeah. There's escape, but there's no redemption, basically.
Yeah. You can say that.
Yeah. Any other final things about Ogja that we want to kind of mention? Anything that we forgot? I think we can otherwise wrap this up, right?
I'm really glad I saw that film.
Yeah,
fine. Yeah, I'm really glad as well. For something that I felt could have really not been for me, at the very beginning, and not having known anything about it also when I started, and then sort of just be patient with it and let it just sort of let it do its thing. And there are some really good set pieces, some very funny scenes. Certainly the animal liberation guy who is so dedicated to the cause that he won't eat a tomato.
He was fainting, dude.
that's hilarious. You see him at the end trying to take on a policeman who just punches him and he just flies through the air.
Or the tattoo reveal.
Translations is...
are sacred.
Translations are sacred, yeah, that's it.
Love that. Yeah, and I think we kind of maybe focused on the darker themes, but it is actually a really funny movie too. So it's not just about, all these other themes. It's genuinely funny. It's beautifully shot. It has great performances. And
I do think that you have to be in the right mood for that film.
Or not know anything about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like me, like you have to go in blind. You'll appreciate the crap out of it. If you read and stuff like this, then I don't think it's the right film.
Yeah, I think, again, also because it's a subtitle movie, it's very hard to be on your phone while watching a subtitle movie in general, I feel. But just because the pacing is the way it is, I think people, it's kind of cool, if it appears hopefully on people's Netflix screen and they just watch it without any, watching the trailer or anything like that, just click play and just watch it, if you have 2 hours free.
But in the meantime, I don't want to put off anyone with the translation because I actually think they did a very, very good job. Their translation was super concise, short, and to the point. Yeah. Like, it wasn't like looping, it wasn't so much that you would miss anything. It was really, really, it had a nice rhythm to it, and it was very concise to the point, and you get everything. So, it's not off-putting at all.
Yeah, no, Netflix usually is pretty good with subtitles.
Yeah.
Because I watch a lot of Bollywood movies, and also, I put the volume down quite a bit, so I have the subtitles on a lot. So no, they're quite good with that, and that's a big, big, big plus for me, at least.
Yeah.
Martin, man, final thoughts on Okja?
None really, other than a really pleasant surprise and glad that I've seen it, actually.
What did you think of the length, Martin? Because I know that's kind of always a thing. I was thinking it's 2 hours, maybe it's like a bit too long.
It's an hour 50 minutes, not 2 hours. 2 hours is with the credits.
It's about an hour 50, so...
With the credit guys, because there's an extra scene in the end.
Oh, is it? I missed that.
Yeah!
Okay. I'll have to go back.
Okay. Anyway, no... questions over the duration. Thought it was fine. It sort of flew by. There were not really any things where it sort of felt sort of stilted or anything like that. No issues with the runtime.
Yeah.
Good. For me, again, I mean, I've pretty much been clear that I love this movie. I think it's going to be probably one of the top 10 movies is going to be in there for me. I really loved it.
I need to make it on Netflix when it comes out.
Yeah. Because again, I did watch it on my laptop, and we usually when we get a screener that has watermarks on it and stuff like that. So I think I really want to watch it in full HD on my big TV, and also just because it's a joy to watch, even if it does have sad parts in it. It's a beautiful, joyful movie, and if it wasn't for the pig rape, it would be totally fine for the kid, for kids too, I think. Cause I don't necessarily feel like children should be sheltered from any sort of harm that goes on in the world. I think they need to realize that this stuff happens, it's a good movie, and it's a very strong recommend for me. So anybody Netflix that sees it come up on their feed, I would just press play immediately if you have 2 hours to spare or 1 hour 50, whatever. And as soon as you're done, you'll go and want to watch more Bong Joon-ho movies. I think that's it for this episode. My name is Asim Birney. You're listening to You Podcast. If you have any comments or any thoughts, drop us an email at youpodcasting@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter or on Facebook, or you can drop us a review, or you can subscribe in iTunes and never miss a show. That's it. Thanks for listening, guys.
Hey, Jeff. We are animal lovers. Our plan is to expose Miranda, rescued Okja, and bring her back to you.
10 years in planning, on the cusp of a product that will feed millions. And what happens? That farmer girl is going to destroy us.
You should know the situation is not good.
Each night before you go to bed.
Shame you had to tell all those little white lies.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together!